This is Anne Blake and Joanne Craig, January 20th, 1995. Type and Archetype, Introduction to Typology, Tape 1 of 1.
So he was looking at the patterning. His looking at patterning is nothing new. People from the beginning of time, whenever that was and whoever that was, have tried to understand each other and tried to limit some kind of behavior in terms of our perceptive abilities. But Jung looked at some preferences that he thought we all had and divided those down into some ways that we're going to talk about later today, later tonight. Let me just check with my colleague here and see how far I'm supposed to go.
We'll talk a little bit about Freud and Jung.
Okay. So I teach Introduction to Psychology 3/4 a year. And in fall quarter, I teach 2 of those classes together. And so I am always introducing people to Freud, and they are always giving me a hard time about who this guy is. It seems to me, what I tell them, is that psychology, as I said before, is nothing new under the sun. But what Freud did was put things together in a written and organized form, which was more than the Western world has done before. And Jung, more than Freud even, used lots of other Eastern mythologies and Eastern ideas, but Freud certainly based many of his ideas on Greek and Roman myths and stories in general. He, of course, had a great emphasis on sexuality and sexual energy and was very controversial in his time. And he had 2 main disciples, and those were Alfred Adler and Carl Jung. Alfred Adler. And Adler looked at power and more social interaction than Freud had. And then Jung, of course, looked out into more the intuitive and the spiritual aspects of us as human beings. And so, unfortunately, as many times happen, these 3 people could not hang together and be different. Jung was very clear about it being okay to hang together in our differences, but they could not. So they had a split, and we have 3 very different theories. Jung talks about typology. He wrote this book, Typology, in about 1921-23. There are a variety of copyright dates that I've come across. And he said that it was one of the culminating works of his career. He had seen, let me just read a couple things of what he says. He wanted to definitely distinguish his theoretical beliefs from Freud and Adler, and to deal with the relationships that individuals have to work and people and things. He was very relationship-oriented. He calls this the fruit of nearly 20 years of work. From observing others, and he says, clients, both genders from all social levels, personal dealings with friend and foe alike, I wonder who he was talking about there, and his own introspective critique. And so again, Freud and Jung looked at themselves and were their own therapists for themselves. So he looked at his own process and worked from there. And he said that he had many years of practical experience, tested 100-fold in the practical treatment of the sick, and these theories originated with them. So both Freud and Jung looked at their clinical work very, very much, to some of our dismay and some of our pleasure. So I'm going to let you do definition more.
Okay. Do you have boundaries of the soul somewhere?
No, I don't.
No? Well, I was just going to elaborate a bit on the split between Freud, Jung, and I think I need to be up a little higher here. Freud, Jung, and Adler, because this was very early, or relatively early in Jung's career, and between 1907 and 1913, when he was with the Circle in Europe, a brilliant analyst, brilliant young analyst, and Jung was very disturbed by the fact, by the early power struggle between Adler and Freud, and later on, of course, he himself was involved in a very, very powerful power struggle between Jung. And in thinking about the differences in the theory, which each man defended very, very, very strongly, he found it almost it just troubled him that the two men could not reconcile their beliefs. And later on, determined that this was most likely between the profound differences in typology. In other words, Freud was very much a thinking type who liked logical premises, hypotheses, whereas Adler, who was more of a sensing type, in other words, lived in his experience of the world here and now, was very much concerned with power struggles between individuals and an individual's relationship to their environment. In Jung, the introverted, intuitive thinking type sitting back was watching these men and realizing that in some way we as individuals needed to learn to bridge the vast differences in the way that we think and perceive and organize information. And this was just the very, very beginnings of his thinking on typology. And of course, typology has been studied throughout history. They're very primitive systems. There were individuals back in pre-medieval times who believed that there were bodily humors, something like liquids in the body that would determine a person's personality characteristics. There are typologies that look at a person's body. You've probably heard of the mesomorph, the ectomorph and the endomorph, who are it's a skeletal structure of very, very thin and taut, very, very muscular, or a body structure in which fat predominates. There are spiritual systems for classifying individuals. Many of you may be familiar with the Enneagram or astrological. Of course, astrology and the position of the stars in the sky when an individual is born is another very important way of classifying behavior. But Jung was the first to develop a psychological typology that could be used as a therapeutic tool. And there now have been extensions of his theory, particularly the Myers-Briggs test, which we will be giving people that come to the workshop tomorrow. We'll be giving you that tonight. There is a Singer-Loomis test, which it doesn't categorize people in the same way that the Myers-Briggs does, but it has your primary orientation toward life, inner or outer, and then your primary attitude or function, and it ranks them. So a few systems, three or four major systems have been developed since Jung began to describe this particular system of typology. So do you want to go on to the inner and outer world focus?
Yes.
We're going to start with that.
I wanted to say one more thing, and that is that as I was reading information for this presentation, I of course got a lot out of it for myself, and I was talking to my analyst about some of my awarenesses, and I was saying, I've been doing a lot of reading about typology, and he said, you know, that's just a concept. And I went, oh, man. So I just want to tell you that this is not truth. This is just a concept.
One of many.
One of many concepts. Okay. One of many concepts.
I'm going to start with it. Okay, so we've been tossing around terms like attitude and function. These are the building blocks of Jung's theory. And we're going to talk now about one's attitude. And I'm going to I'm an introverted type. I don't know if I look more nervous than Anne or not, but for me, I'm going to talk about this little diagram right here. This is the ego, which is the center of a person's conscious personality, meaning all that I'm aware of right now. The object is a psychological term that encompasses people, things, situations, anything in the outer world that an individual reacts to. So the first big issue that Jung looked at in trying to clump people together was where does their energy go? For an introverted person, which I am right here, the object, in other words, things in the outer environment, like all of you sitting out there right now, impinge upon me. The energy comes from outward in. And I'm very, very aware always of how people, how things, how the environment affects me. I can't get away from it. In fact, Jung has a very, very interesting quote where he talks about fear of the object, fear of people, fear of things in the environment overwhelming a person who has a very, very strong introverted attitude. Now, most of us who are born introverted do make some peace with people, with situations that we have to cope with, but the tendency is always to draw back and to take time for ourselves, to get some separation between ourselves and what is in the outer world. So the direction always flows, or predominantly flows, consciously outward in. But since Jung dealt with opposite and opposing tendencies, he also said there is a compensating tendency for people who are introverted to go outward. But that happens in our unconscious more than our conscious relationship to the world. So there is energy in me going outward towards you, but I am primarily backing away from this audience right now. And that isn't, that's an introverted position.
And I happen to be on the cusp when I... So one of the things that I do most when I am teaching is I either draw the yin-yang symbol or I draw a continuum with that moderate median ground in the middle. And so I happen to be that a kind of person that can cusp it. When I go to a party where I know no one, for instance, a wedding reception of people I don't know very well, so I don't know any of their friends, but I feel compelled to go to their wedding, I walk into the wedding reception and I'm gone in 15 seconds. So that's the introverted part of me. But I found out when I was teaching that it's showtime. I absolutely love it. When I go back to high school reunions, people say, "Boy, are you different?" And it's because I was really shy and scared as a kid and didn't let my full self come out. And then once I got a little therapy, I became... totally unconscious cough. I am much more comfortable, at least in a role with people. So my energy goes outward when I'm with people and when I'm comfortable. I can do the introverted thing very, very well. I like a lot of alone time. But when I'm on stage, I am definitely on.
And I believe that there have been studies that have shown that introverts are much more represented in when they survey people that seek psychological help. And one of the big reasons for that is that that extroverts in general, in other words, people whose energy is directed outward in our culture in particular, toward people, toward things, toward organizations, are more rewarded in culture than, and generally in the United States, than are extroverts. On the other hand, introverts. On the other hand, a country like Switzerland is there's a large population of introverted sensation types, who energy comes from the object in, from people and situations in, and there's a focus on concrete details. You think of the watches that are made, the beauty of the Swiss streets, the attention that's given to beauty, to the outward environment. And you know, we can talk later on about whether that's a nature-nurture issue, whether or not why certain countries seem to cultivate a particular attitude or orientation toward life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I happen to be, by genetic code, I was going to say Swiss, I'm not, I'm Swedish, Swedish, a few more syllables in there, and German and English. And the only way that past lives make sense to me, that's just my particular way of thinking, I must have been Italian sometime. I must have been. Because my family is very Swedish and very English and very German, very uptight, quiet, introverted, stoic people. So I don't know where I came from, but I'm happy to be here.
I don't know what to do with that. That's what's called the collective unconscious. Which for Anne lives partially in Italy.
That's right. I left my heart in Naples.
Looks like we're here. Right?
I think so.
Good. Now we're going to ask you to listen and think and decide for yourselves whether or not, in general, you can relate more to the introverted attitude or the extroverted attitude. And for some of you, you may feel that you're evenly divided between these items that we read, but just... sort of pay attention, and you'll probably fall on one or the other side, because later on, after the break, we're going to actually ask you to go to different quadrants of the room. So pay attention to the steps that we're going to go through here. First, we're going to identify the attitude, introversion and extroversion, and later on, we're going to see if you can identify your own predominant function. So that's what we're going to do tonight.
Okay.
So this is your attitude, and Anne is going to read some characteristics of extroverts, and I'm going to read some characteristics of introverts.
And are we going to do those
back and forth?
Okay.
Right.
Fine. An extrovert is an afterthinker. This person cannot understand life until they have lived it. I just moved into a new office space, and I had to have my furniture in and all the books on the bookcases and all the pictures on the wall until I could decide the space is too small for me. So I am changing offices tomorrow afternoon.
Good. Whereas I, the introvert, am a forethinker. I cannot live life until I understand it. Of course, I can live life until I understand it, but I'm constantly seeking understanding.
An extrovert's attitude is relaxed and confident. They expect the waters to prove shallow, and they plunge readily into new and untried experiences.
The attitude of an introvert is more reserved and questioning. They expect the waters to be deep and pause to take soundings in the new and untried.
An extrovert's mind is outwardly directed, the interest and attention following objective happenings outside, primarily those in the immediate environment. Their real world, therefore, is the outer world of people and things.
For the introvert, the mind is inwardly directed. The introvert is frequently unaware of the objective environment, and the interest and attention is constantly being engrossed by inner events. Their real world, therefore, is the inner world of ideas and understanding.
An extrovert is a civilizing genius. They are people of action and practical achievement who go from doing to considering and back to doing.
The person with the introverted attitude is a cultural genius. The people of ideas and abstract invention who go from considering doing and back then to considering. I'll have Anne read it. I think I'm considering somewhere. The introvert goes from considering to doing and then back to considering. How's that?
Conduct in essential matters is always governed by the objective condition. So the extrovert is objective, interacting with the object outside. The object is out there. Subjective is in here.
The conduct for the introvert in essential matters is always governed by subjective values, inner values.
Extroverts spend themselves lavishly upon external claims and conditions which to them constitute life. So whatever's going on out there is how I define myself.
For the introvert generally defends himself from outer claims. Where am I here? Against external claims and conditions in favor of the inner life.
The extrovert is understandable and accessible and often sociable. Is more at home in the world of people and things than in the world of ideas.
The introvert tends to be subtle and impenetrable, often taciturn and shy, more at home in the world of ideas than in the world of people and things.
Extroverts are expansive and less impassioned. They unload their emotions as they go along.
The introvert is intense and passionate. They bottle up their emotions and guard them carefully as high explosives.
The typical weakness for extroverts lies in a tendency toward intellectual superficiality. Intellectual superficiality, which is very conspicuous in extreme types.
Whereas a weakness for introverts is in a tendency towards impracticality, very conspicuous in extreme types.
Health and wholeness for extroverts depend on a reasonable development of balancing introversion.
Whereas health and wholesomeness depend upon a reasonable development of extroversion for the introvert.
And there are some names down here of extroverts. So Freud, Darwin, and both Roosevelts, both Theodore and Franklin Delano.
And for introverts, representatives would be Jung, Einstein, and Lincoln.
One of the things that we will talk about both today and tomorrow is Jung's hope that we balance things. So he talks about the extreme, the places way out on either side of the continuum, is not being very balanced, as though I stand on one foot, for instance, or I use only my right hand and never my left. It might have been Liszt who tied one finger back because it wouldn't play fast enough, and what happened to that finger? It atrophied. And so that's what we do if we don't develop as much as we can.
We need to find the page for the perceiving and judging.
I think it's the one I don't have. How about 75? So I hope that you are beginning to, if you don't already know, and I'm sure most of you do, consider which you are, either introverted or extroverted, as a general rule. These are not absolutes.
If you would like, do you all have name tags?
No? You need name tags.
You need name tags.
Me? I just did.
And what we'd like you to do is, if you generally identified more with the introverted position in the world, write an I on your name tag up above. And if you generally related a little bit more to the extrovert position, write an E. More toward the top, because we're going to go through a stepwise system here.
Just for tonight.
Put E on one side, X on the other, or E and I, and then put a dot toward where you think you are. How about that? E I, and then do a little scale there. Sure. For the sensing types here, that wanna. Here we go. E, I, and that's me. Maybe more like this for some of you.
And if you're either or, sometimes rather, your dot's gonna probably be more towards the middle.
Okay. JP.
Fine.
Want me to explain this?
Yes.
Okay.
Madonna is a what?
She's a what?
She's an extrovert. And
Jackie O'Nass.
Oh, sorry.
Jackie
I'm sorry.
Onassis.
Introvert. Yes. Madonna's an extrovert, and I just had another thought of who's an extrovert, but I forgot. Cher. Thank you, Cher.
Mm-hmm.
Cher?
Well, just judging from their behavior.
It makes him a senator, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And introverts...
I said Jackie Onassis.
Jackie Onassis is probably...
protecting herself from the outer world,
right.
Or privacy.
And Garbo was kind of reclusive. We're talking about extremes now, to give the examples. Eleanor Roosevelt was kind of halfway in and out. I think she was an example of somebody who's halfway on the cusp. She was out there, but very thoughtful and inward.
What do you think of Hillary Clinton?
An interesting couple was Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson.
Aren't they?
Wow.
Yeah. We'll talk about how people get together a little bit, too. Yeah.
Do any other names of women who seem to be extreme representations of this attitude come to your mind?
Emily Dickinson.
Oh, yeah, it's very introverted.
The Brontes. Mm-hmm. Introverted.
Extroverted
women. Besides Madonna? Who's out there? Roseanne, yeah, right. Roseanne's out there. Roseanne.
Thatcher.
Yeah, Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher.
He's extroverted. Sensing.
I don't know her well enough. Bette Midler, extroverted, right. The problem is that we probably don't know that many introverted people because they're sort of inward and they're not very often famous. But who wrote The Bell Jar? Sylvia Plath. What's her name? Oates. Joyce Carol Oates. Those folks are writers, so they're famous, but they're not. They're not extroverted in terms of their fame. That's true.
I mean, a lot of them may be introverted.
Right. Certainly actors are more like that, yeah, because they get into other characters so they can be outgoing. They talk about that a lot. Yeah. But Jack Nicholson is pretty much out there. Maybe Dustin Hoffman's a little more inward.
Barbra Streisand.
Ooh, that's a good example.
Right.
Pretty introverted, and yet when she's on stage, boy, is she out there.
Because we're going to attempt tonight to classify you in terms of your attitude and one major function that you use. We're going to take a stepwise system here. So we're going to take a mid step here. These are the four functions, in other words, the four ways that they're like intelligences almost, or ways of operating in our environment. Two are for taking in information, and two are for acting upon the information that we take in. Okay, and those are the four functions of sensing and intuition, which are ways of taking in information, which Jung calls perceiving functions. In other words, taking in from the environment, or thinking and feeling, which are both ways of acting on the environment. Or deciding or valuing, but they're more active functions. These are more passive functions. And individuals will generally be either more judging or more perceiving. In other words, you will primarily act and decide, or you will primarily be a perceiver, a person that takes in. And that's what we're going to ask you to that is what we're going to ask you to classify yourself as right now, primarily a perceiver or primarily a judger. And we're going to give you some statements that will help you make that decision.
Oops, I got the wrong page. So judgers are more decisive than curious.
And again, listen to see which one of these categories describes you. A perceiving type is generally more curious than decisive.
Judging types live according to plans, standards, and customs, not easily or lightly set aside, to which the situation of the moment must, if possible, be made to conform.
Whereas a perceiving type is generally lives according to the situation of the moment, and then they adjust themselves according to the situation.
I just want to check, is her mic on? Okay, she sounds like she's working really hard. Judging types make definite choices among life's possibilities, but may not appreciate or utilize, unplanned, unexpected, or incidental happenings. They want things scheduled.
Whereas a perceiving type is frequently masterful in their handling of the unplanned, unexpected, and incidental, but may not make effective choice among life's possibilities.
Some recognition rippling.
Okay.
Rational judging types depend on reasoned judgments, their own or borrowed from somebody else, to protect them from unnecessary or undesirable experiences.
Okay. The perceptive types are empirical. They depend upon their readiness for anything and everything to bring them constant flow of new experience, much more than they can usually digest or use.
Judging types like to have matters settled and decided as promptly as possible, so that they will know what's going to happen and can plan for it and be prepared for it.
The perceptive types like to keep decisions open as long as possible before doing anything irrevocable because they don't know nearly enough about it yet.
Judging types think or feel that they know what other people ought to do about almost everything and are not averse to telling them.
Perceptive types know what other people are doing and are interested to see how it comes out.
Sounds nice, doesn't it? Judging types take real pleasure in getting something finished, out of the way, and off their minds.
Whereas perceptive types take great pleasure in starting something new until the newness wears off.
And judging types are inclined to regard the perceptive types as aimless drifters. Aimless drifters.
The perceptive types will often judge the judging types as only half alive. Sounds like a little bit of a paradox.
Judging types aim to be right.
Perceptive types aim to miss nothing.
Judging types are self-regimented, purposeful, and exacting.
Whereas perceptive types are flexible, adaptable, and tolerant.
So your goal is to come up with a decision at this point about which side you fall on, either judging or perceiving. And we're going to hand out some more little things for you to put on your name tag.
What do they get?
So you're going to get little round dots.
What color for what?
I'm going to get to that in just a second. The black dots.
F, feeling type. Judging,
no, right? No question. The black dots are for judging types. The neon dots are for perceiving types.
Somebody bring the colors.
Hey. So actually, can those be sent back, Bev? Can those be sent back?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are enough to kind of flow them. Yes, sir. Yes. The book we are using at the present is Gifts Differing by Isabel Briggs Myers, and you have a bibliography of the books that we are using, but this one is Gifts Differing. Is that what you're asking? Let's wait till this gets done so that we're not competing, and then we, yeah.
Okay. No. I don't really know. Where that falls in the realm of Jungian psychology, I was straining because I wasn't hearing myself. I wasn't hearing my voice, so I think I'll just hold this. Jung, you want us to restate what we said about judging and perceiving? Jung, yes.
I wondered how much of what Myers Briggs is taken directly from Jungian psychology and where she's.
Oh, in terms of you know the Myers Briggs system.
I've heard of it.
Right, Jung talked about judging and perceptive functions. In other words, he came up with functions of thinking, feeling. He identified thinking, feeling, sensing, and intuition. But judging and perceiving are not. He did not consider them to be functions. Thinking or feeling and sensing and intuition fall into one of the categories of taking in information or responding to it. The thinking and the feeling, perceptive, you know, those are perceiving functions.
Opposite.
Right.
Judging.
But they're judging functions, whereas sensation and intuition are perceiving. Isabel Myers Briggs thought, Jung identified what he called pure types. They're theoretical types. There are no, and we're going to talk about this later on, there's no pure introverted feeling type, because people act on the world, and Isabel Myers Briggs extended Jung's theory, and because she was more interested in the practical ways in which typology could be manifest in jobs, hobbies, friendships, disputes. So she added on, she studied more of the auxiliary function, the helping, the function that we take on as a secondary function to help us, and also the way that we act in the world. And so she made judging and perceiving a fourth category. But both Jung and Isabel Myers-Briggs talked about perceiving and judging as processes. I don't know if that's more clear.
Okay. I'm going to do it graphically for just a second. So, whoopsie. I'm not sensing. So Jung talked about these two, sensing and intuition, as perceiving. And then these two, thinking and feeling, as judging. So then, as Joanne said, Myers-Briggs took that judging and perceiving out another step. But Jung still clumped these together by those two phrases.
Right. And we're making such a big point of the judging and of the categories of judging and perceiving, because we're trying to classify you in a systematic manner, to let you try to classify yourself. And one of the best ways to do it was to find the people that were primarily were perceiving, and then those that were primarily judging, and then we're going to take another step. So we're separating them out for a particular reason. So we just, how many of you thought you were primarily perceiving? Wow. And any of you primarily judging types? Oh. Pretty good. That's just about half and half.
Not bad. You're doing a good job.
So where are we now here? I'm lost.
So we've given them their neons, and now we're going to talk about, we're going to define these.
We've got the judges and the perceivers, right? Good. Okay. You're going to do that.
And we're right on time, too.
Are we really?
Yeah.
Can't be. Okay. Right. 8:15, 8:20. Anne's going to do the...
thinking and feelings?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to talk to you about, again, the judging types that act on the world and make decisions. Okay, so that's the main way that they act with the world. They make decisions. And I'm going to contrast for you the thinking and the feeling. Now, for some of you, this is going to make a lot of sense. And for the others of you, you're going to be a sensate or a intuitive person. This is going to make no sense at all. So hang in there, and your turn's going to come with Joanne in just a minute. So see if any of these fit or not.
Now you're talking to the...
I'm talking to the thinking and feeling types.
The judging. The people that just decided you were primarily judging.
I'm talking to the black dots. That's what I'm talking to.
The black dots. Right. The neon dots can listen, but don't decide.
And you don't anyway, so it's fine. You don't make decisions, so that's fine. So the black dots. Do you value logic above sentiment, or do you value sentiment above logic? So sentiment or logic. It's a good thing I didn't have that little thing with this cough, isn't it?
Can you tell us which of those was which at this point?
I suppose that's a great idea. Okay, let me start over again.
Why don't I do one and you do the other?
No.
Thanks. It's more logical, Anne.
Well, you can tell which one we are. You know, the fun thing is that we are almost exactly opposite on all the typology, so get off my side, will you? Okay. Okay, so the thinking type is going to be the first paragraph, and the first column, and the feeling type is going to be the second. These are for the black dot people. Okay, thinking types value logic above sentiment. Feeling types value sentiment above logic. I like mysteries. Thinking types are usually impersonal, being more interested in things than in human relationships. Feeling types are just the opposite. They're usually more personal, being more interested in people than in things. Thinking types, if forced to choose between truthfulness and tactfulness, will usually be truthful. Feeling types, if forced to choose between tactfulness and truthfulness, will usually be tactful, unless she's on my side. And I saw you.
You're cheating.
Thinking types are stronger in executive ability. Feeling types are stronger in social arts. So the two comparisons are executive ability and social arts. Thinking types are usually likely to question the conclusions of other people on principle, believing them probably to be wrong. Feeling types are likely to agree with those around them, thinking as other people think, believing them probably right. Thinking types are naturally brief and businesslike. and often seem to be either unfriendly or unsociable without knowing or intending it. Feeling types are naturally friendly. Whether sociable or not, they usually find it difficult to be brief and businesslike. Thinking types are usually able to organize facts and ideas into logical sequence that states the subject, makes the necessary points, comes to a conclusion, and stops there without repetition. Feeling types contribute to the welfare of society by their loyal support of good works and those movements generally regarded as good by the community, which they feel correctly about and so can serve effectively. Another big paragraph. Thinking types, more often men than women, and when married to a feeling type, naturally become the guardian of the spouse's neglected and unreliable thinking. But that sounds a little bit judgmental, but wait till this paragraph. Feeling types are more often women than men, and when married to a thinker, frequently become guardian of the spouse's neglected and harassed feelings.
Women who are thinking types are often considered to be cold and distant.
Yes? And what are men who are feeling types? Kind of
sissy.
I didn't want to say those words, so thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do we wait till
dots? Or?
Let's do okay. Both things.
All right, so I'm going to do the perceiving functions now. So for those people that thought you primarily were a person that took in information, listen up here. And I'm going to read a paragraph that I wrote because I like to read what I write.
And only chance she gets.
If I write it. I'm better at reading what I write than operating on my feet. Perceiving. There are two opposing ways of perceiving or gathering information without responding to it. Jung called sensation and intuition irrational functions. Some individuals automatically take in information directly through the five senses. They take in all directly, seeing sizes, shapes, colors, hearing sounds. Sensation is a psychological function that mediates the perception of a physical stimulus. Sensation is related not only to external stimuli, but to inner ones, for example, changes in the internal organic processes. Other individuals prefer to take in information in a more general way, without being aware of specific details. This is intuition, the irrational function that gains a total impression of a situation. An individual using intuition gets the whole content, but cannot explain how this content came into being. And this is Jung. It is a function that mediates perceptions in an unconscious way. Intuition is a kind of instinctive apprehension, no matter of what contents. Everything, whether inner or outer objects or their relationships, can be the focus of this perception. And let's just read a few of the. So now you perceiving types are going to decide if you're primarily sensing or intuitive. And we're going to read the categories. Will you help me?
Please.
Okay. If you can find it.
Is that the one I don't have? There was one I didn't have. I think that's the one I don't have. But I have it. Okay. I have the page number.
Okay. 1 minute here.
I don't.
You don't?
No.
One thing I didn't do when I was drawing the diagrams is unpack all of my notes here. You can see I have a lot of them. And I'm getting embarrassed. Well, find it, Ann.
Here it is.
Good for you. All right. Let's just do the short ones.
Okay.
Sensing?
Sure. Okay. Face life observantly craving enjoyment.
That sensation. Intuition, intuitives face life expectantly craving inspiration.
Sensing types admit to consciousness every sense impression and are intensely aware of the external environment. They are observant at the expense of imagination. Yes, I will. Let me do that one more time. I can't see it, which is part of the problem. Okay, sensing. Face life observantly craving enjoyment.
Intuitives face life expectantly craving inspiration.
Sensing types admit to consciousness every sense impression and are intensely aware of the external environment. They are observant at the expense of imagination.
Intuitives admit to consciousness only the sense impressions related to the current inspiration. They are imaginative at the expense of observation.
So sensing types are observant, intuitives are imaginative. Sensing types are by nature pleasure lovers and consumers. They love life as it is and have a great capacity for enjoyment. They are in general contented.
Intuitives are by nature initiators, inventors, and promoters, having no taste for life as it is and small capacity for living in and enjoying the present. They are generally restless.
Sensing types desire chiefly to possess and enjoy, and being very observant, they are imitative, wanting to have what other people have and to do what other people do, and are very dependent on their physical surroundings.
Intuitives desire chiefly opportunities and possibilities and are very imaginative. They are inventive and original, quite indifferent to what other people have and do, and are very independent of their physical surroundings.
Sensing types dislike intensely any and every occupation. There's more. Dislike intensely every and any occupation which requires the suppression of sensing, and are most reluctant to sacrifice pleasant enjoyment, present enjoyment, to future gain or good.
Down with IRAs. Or the intuitives dislike intensely any and every occupation which necessitates sustained concentration on sensing or details, and are willing to sacrifice the present to a large extent, since they neither live in it nor particularly enjoy it. Sounds like hell.
It is. Sensing types prefer the art of living in the present to the satisfactions of enterprise and achievement.
Intuitives prefer the joy of enterprise and achievement and pay little or no attention to the art of living in the present.
Sensing types contribute to the public welfare by their support of every form of enjoyment, recreation, and every variety of comfort, luxury, and beauty.
Intuitives contribute to the public welfare by their inventiveness, initiative, enterprise, and powers of inspired leadership in every direction of human interest.
That's pretty boring. Mm-hmm. Sensing types are always in danger of being frivolous unless balance is attained through the development of the judging process or the sensing process.
Intuitives are always in danger of being fickle, changeable, and lacking in persistence unless balance is attained through development of a judging process.
Okay. So the goal now is for those of you with black dots, the judging folks, to decide whether you are thinking or feeling, and when the stars come along, if you're a thinker, you get a gold star. And if you're a feeler, you get a red star. Well, sorry. And for the perceptive folks, when the stars come along, if you are a sensei type, you're going to get a green star. And if you're an intuitive type, you'll give yourself a blue star.
Okay. Can I talk? Is everybody keeping up here?
We got the colors.
I'm lost in the forest.
Yes.
Yes, what we're doing is we're asking you to identify your primary way of perceiving information. We're not talking. Most people develop another function or two other functions very very well, but we're asking you to identify the primary function, either thinking, feeling, intuition, or sensation. And then later on, we're going to talk about the auxiliary functions.
And your primary function, as we are doing it tonight, is going to be connected with your either black or neon dot.
Yes. Which one of the descriptions did you most identify with?
Intuition, without a doubt.
When we read the categories?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think I'm on the cusp of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not dominant for me. And this is why I was hoping that Jungians would tell me the truth.
Right. No, we're doing this so people have an experience. Well, we're doing this so people have an experience of. We're doing this so we can classify you, so people get the experience of trying to discern what they are. But this is actually Jung. This is actually Jung. And
I read Jung's typology.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the perceiving judging classifications. You know, he talks about people who are dominant intuitions and don't say anything.
Yes. Yes, and we're gonna get to that actually afterward.
Good.
To what he calls the pure types, but you probably because we did a stepwise process, we had to put in perceiving and judging, so you could divide yourself. Otherwise, we would have an introverted or an extroverted orientation, and two functions that you could identify either or. So what we're trying to do is try to find your dominant function in this way. We weren't emphasizing Myers-Briggs. We were doing it as a classification system for ourselves to help you.
And you're absolutely right that we were being too absolute. So we were, you know, let me put my tongue in my cheek when we say the black dots can only be and the neon dots can only be. But we are using judging and perceiving because the words that Jung used to divide thinking, feeling, sensing, intuition were rational and irrational. And so we just took different words. Yeah, yeah. And I think judging and perceiving are easier words to understand. Rational and irrational don't hold much connotation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, it seems worse to me to say judging than irrational.
Mm-hmm. And also, so did Jung's description of introverts. I mean, it's hard to keep the valuing out of it. But this is really Jungian that we're doing.
Right. I have many in my text, which is about 18 pages, which I just don't have time enough for. I have many quotes from Jung. And Jung, when he talks about the pure types, his descriptions of the pure types is they're very extreme because they don't include a any other function that has to been developed. So a person that's primarily takes in information through intuition or sensation and is introverted, like yourself and myself, I'm an introverted intuitive type. He calls the most useless of the types. Culturally.
He was one himself.
Yes, he was. But he was very interested in the collective. And of course, if you're talking about the inner world, then they're very useful. And he knew that, but I think that was tongue-in-cheek.
Sure.
Yes.
Right.
Right. So now we do have...
in fact, that's where we are.
Right. We're back. We're going to get back to Jung now, right now. And his eight categories, and we're leaving out the judging and the perceiving functions, because what you're going to have if you ignore the P and the J is eight combinations of an attitude, where which direction your energy flows, either extroverted or introverted, and what sense, what function you primarily utilize in the environment, sensing, intuition, thinking, or feeling. And this is essentially the structure that Jung identified, his eight types. Extroverted sensing, introverted sensing, extroverted intuition, extroverted thinking, extroverted feeling, and introverted feeling. So, should we go, do you all have I think you've probably classified yourselves. Should we run through the system or just do the music?
We're at this place anyway, so thanks.
Okay.
And should we do the music now or later?
We'll let you guys ask. I put together a musical activity, which is I'm going to play some music for you and let you listen to the music and decide what function it primarily speaks from, sensing, intuition, thinking, or feeling. And we can either do that after a 10-minute break or before a 10-minute break.
What's your sense? We have a vote either way.
No.
How many now? The music. Later? Now. Can you help me, Paul? Okay. We'll just do about, we're not going to play the whole songs, maybe four of it. Sweet Honey in the Rock.
The sense of it without the words?
These are the Beatitudes. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall attain mercy. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. What function, what way of being in the world do you think that would represent? Probably the feeling function, which is valuing what you value. Yes. Enjoying the here and now, the sensual pleasures.
Yes, and my friend is blowing in the wind. that one. I had to think about that for a while. Great. What did you think? Uh-huh. Could be intuition.
Perceptive.
Yeah, intuition is a perceptive function, taking in. Thinking, right? And this one said an introverted thinker, which is also what I thought. One of the things I was going to discuss but didn't quite fit in before the break is something about the world of time of the different functions. And we did mention briefly, but the thinking person, the person that follows a logical system in making decisions or judgments about the world, goes from the past to the present. It's like a timeline. Whereas the intuitive primarily orients themselves toward future possibilities. It's a discontinuous function. It's out there. The future's out there, and then you have to come back into the present. A sensing person lives in the present, and a feeling person generally orients themselves toward the past because that's where the value was in the past. So I thought either intuition or thinking for this one, but probably introverted thinking.
Question?
For Dylan.
Joanne, mm-hmm. Question?
My question is about what if you're intuitive thinking?
That's probably intuitive thinking, this one. Right. It probably is both. Again, there's no discrete category here. Tune, Beth. Wrong. It was hair. What do you think of that one? When were you born?
Material girl.
One more. That's the material world. What way of operating deals in the material world. Sensing, right. What's that? Right. Extroverted sensing, that's right. One more. Right. Delete this. You all get this one correct.
This is the bonus question.
None of the above. This is a function that goes this way. You know? That one. It's called the transcendent function. Here we go. Someone said introverted feeling, the value on the own, the one's own value. And pointed out to me that this one function completely. Did we?
Yes.
Do
I think we must.
And listen to the talking heads. Feel free.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.